All right, cool. We're ready to go live. Alexander Mercouris in London. How are you doing this Friday evening, Alexander?
Extremely well. Fascinating time here in London. Lots of things going on here. But obviously the focus is on the US and what's going on over there, which is really quite extraordinary, I think. And we'll be discussing in this further in this program, but always a pleasure to be with our viewers on a Friday, and I hope that we'll be able to do this on a regular basis, recapitulating the news of the week.
Yeah, we're going to try to do a Friday evening our time, late morning, early afternoon U.S. time, I believe very late evening Australia time in Asia, but. We'll try to do this every Friday around this time. And I also did a post. I put a post on the community section of our channel as well. So not only are we supposedly YouTube is sending out a notification about the live stream, but I'll also put a post in the community section as well to try and notify everybody 4, 5, 6 hours ahead of time as well. Yeah. Anyway, hello to everybody. We hope you are doing well. Kalispera sas from Johannesburg. Mm. Everyone from all around the world, I hope everyone is having a really good Friday. I hope everyone in the U.S. has a really good Labor Day weekend as well. Monday, I believe, is a holiday in the U.S. I don't know where else there's a holiday. Is there a holiday in the U.K. on Monday?
Oh, no, not at all. Well, our holiday was on the 31st, which is actually, we had it this past Monday, which is past.
All right, great. Hello to everybody. Hello, Helen. Hello, Lori, David, Suzanne, Kelly from Halkidiki. Awesome. How are you doing? How are things in Halkidiki? Things are very hot here in Greece. Things are heating up in the U.S. Alexander, we're going to get right into it. We have a lot to cover. So let's just jump into the topic for today, which is really, really troubling topic, I think. And that has to do with the election and what I would like to call maybe the third coup attempt. If you looked at Russiagate, the first, maybe the impeachment Ukraine and the Zelensky thing as a very, very failed second attempt. Yeah. The Russiagate one was actually a pretty good attempt.
Yeah,
I mean, they really game planned that out pretty well. The Ukraine one was god awful. But now I think we have all the dots connected, Alexander, for what looks like to be the third coup attempt. Would you like me to read you some titles of some headlines that I pulled up, or do you want to?
No, please do. I think it's always interesting to hear these headlines because they give a flavor of this. What I will say is I agree. This does increasingly have the quality of a coup attempt because what is now being said, some of the things that have been said are very alarming. And they are going to create concerns among many people. And of course, every coup attempt that succeeds or is attempts to succeed creates an atmosphere of tension in the lead up to it.
All right. Okay. So let's go to, I think, the story that kicked off the speculation of the rigging of the election, the November election. And that was an exclusive from Axios. And it was actually an HBO show that Axios did with the CEO of a company called Hawkfish. The title reads, "Exclusive, Dem Group Warns of Apparent Trump Election Day Landslide." It's a little bit of a misleading title, but you'll explain that, Alexander. We have a title from, from Revolver News, which did a pretty in-depth expose on what's going on. And it says, "Transition Integrity Project. Is this Soros-linked group plotting a color revolution against President Trump?" And that article brings up the names of usual color revolution and regime change characters, brings up the name of Michael McFaul. It brings up the name of David Frum, Bill Kristol. And of course, no color revolution is complete without the Open Society and George Soros. And it also puts a lot of links to the Maidan Ukraine coup as well. So Alexander, from Revolver News and from Axios, which cites a Bloomberg company, a Bloomberg story and company called Hawkfish. What is going on here? This is called the Red Mirage, by the way. That's the that's how they're naming this operation, which is an interesting name to say the least. So Alexander, what do you make of this?
Well, I think it's very disturbing. Let's first of all just say what this whole thing is. And notice Bloomberg is behind it. I mean, he's behind some of this. And this is Michael Bloomberg, who, remember, was a Democratic Party. He was a candidate for the Democratic Party's nomination. He's very hostile to Donald Trump. And he's a billionaire, not just a billionaire, but a 100 plus billionaire. So, I mean, he's an immensely rich man. And you mentioned other very rich people who are involved in all of this. And also another person who I think the story connects to, and it explains a comment she made, which I found very disturbing at the time, but I think it might now makes even better sense, was Hillary Clinton at the Democratic Party convention. Because what she said there, she said it very straightforwardly, was that Joe Biden should not concede, even if it appears. She should never concede to Donald Trump. The idea seemed to be that there was never any situation where Joe Biden would ever accept that Donald Trump had legitimately won the election. And now we know what the story is. Supposedly, there's going to be the vote on election day. The results will come in, and as they always do, the usual results will come in. Those results will show that Donald Trump has won a landslide in the Electoral College. And that will give the impression on election day that Donald Trump is the elected president of the United States. However, and supposedly, after that, results will start to trickle in over the next few days, or perhaps weeks, from all of these mail-in ballots, and gradually and over time, that result will flip or will change. And instead of Donald Trump winning by a landslide in the Electoral College, as it would appear to have been the case on election day, it will all be reversed and the winner will be Joe Biden. Now, this is, if I may say so, an extraordinary scenario. What it basically says is that the Democrats will not accept the outcome of the election on election day. They will try to argue that the election is not over when, by every historic precedent, it is over. And we've explained many times on these programs our great misgivings about mail-in ballots, and we now see what the dangers they represent are, because it means that on election day, even if Trump wins a landslide in the Electoral College, the Democrats won't recognize it and will continue to hold out, and over days or weeks, for as long as it takes, as far as they are concerned, until the results come in, which will change that. And talking about mail-in ballots, we've discussed also how easy potentially it would be to manipulate those. So this is a nightmare scenario. It shows that the Democrats are not prepared to accept a Trump victory. And of course, it sets the scene for a contested election outcome, with some Democrat Party media agencies already talking wildly about calling in the military, doing all sorts of extraordinary things in order to try to remove Trump from the White House. Now, I have to say, I mean, that these kind of scenarios are even being talked about in the United States absolutely horrifies me. If this was Sudan or Egypt or you know, Paraguay, well, maybe things like that happen there. But in the United States of America, I mean, I find that astonishing. But there we are. That is happening. And can I just say, of course, in a situation where you've also had violence in American cities, rising crime, people going out with guns. We saw sort of armed groups organizing. We've seen attempts to take over control of parts of American cities from the legitimate authorities. We've seen Democratic governors and Democratic mayors resisting the forces, the federal forces that have tried to restore order. In this kind of climate, speculating on these kind of scenarios is beyond dangerous. And in fact, it is so dangerous that I can't help but think that it is actually preparing the ground for some kind of violent emergency, which will justify calling the military in. Now, whether the military would solidly conform to this scenario, I very much wonder. My understanding is that the rank and file of the military tend to be Republicans. I mean, I'm not absolutely certain about that. And our viewers can perhaps confirm. But I think merely discussing these scenarios creates dangerous possibilities for the future of the United States. And it shows also both how dangerous the situation in the United States has become and the extent to which the Democrats, or at least the DNC, are prepared to stop at nothing to get Trump out of the White House and to gain control.
All right. So, Alexander, this third coup is actually operating on four fronts. And yeah, when I said I think we have enough pieces to connect the dots, I really feel that we do have enough pieces to figure out what's going to happen come November. The first front, you hinted at it. It's Hillary Clinton's announcement where she said Joe Biden should not concede no matter what. That's kind of the media front. And the Washington Post is one of the Jeff Bezos Washington Post is one of the publications that's leading this this part of the plan. For example, the headline via Summit News, Washington Post, election result will spark violence unless it's a Biden landslide. Now, we did the video where we outlined Biden's speech where he pretty much said the same thing. Vote for me or else was
or
his.
Else. And yeah, this is again what we see. I mean, the Democrats, I'm going to say it straightforwardly, you know, not the whole Democratic Party. There are undoubtedly some many decent people in the Democratic Party. But the DNC is behaving, I find it, I'm going to say it straightforwardly, increasingly like an organized criminal organization. I mean, you know, threats, if you don't vote for us, you know, that, you know, there'll be chaos and violence, and plans announced in the media in this extraordinary way to disrupt the outcome of the vote. So, I mean, it's all incredibly disturbing, and you're absolutely right. Hillary Clinton is preparing the media here, but of course we see that there are other steps being taken alongside that.
No, they're telling us exactly what they're going to do. The first one, the media is telling us. Yeah. The second one is, in my research, I've seen that John Podesta, remember the former campaign manager of Hillary Clinton, is actually working with Democrats out west, specifically in Washington, the states of Washington, Oregon, and California, to prepare the grounds should Trump not concede to losing the election after the mail-in ballots are tallied up and it works out against him. If Trump does not leave the White House, even if he wins the Electoral College by a slim margin, they're going to try to force him out. Podesta is working with Democrats out west to threaten that these three states would secede from the United States. So that's John Podesta. He's been tasked with the secession part of it. You have the media part of it, which is preparing, you know, which is doing the indoctrination and the propaganda side of things. Now, let me read you from Axios, the Red Mirage plan. That comes from the Bloomberg company, the Hawkfish company. Let me read you what the CEO said, and then I'm going to read you an excerpt from the fourth leg of this plan, which is coming from the Transition Integrity Project, the Soros-funded group. So this is coming from the Bloomberg-funded group, and this is what Hawkfish CEO Josh Mendelson calls the scenario a red mirage. And this is a quote from the Hawkfish CEO. "We are sounding an alarm and saying that this is a very real possibility that the data is going to show on election night an incredible victory for Donald Trump. When every legitimate vote is tallied, every legitimate vote is tallied, and we get to the final day, which will be some day after Election Day, it will in fact show that what happened on election night was exactly that, a mirage. Mm. It looked like Donald Trump was in the lead, and he fundamentally was not. When every ballot gets counted, they're estimating, Hawkfish Alexander is estimating 167 million voters come November, but they're also estimating 80 million mail-in ballots, 80 million mail-in ballots. And finally, Alexander, let me read you the final part of this plan, which is the Soros-backed Transition Integrity Project. They call themselves a bipartisan group, mm-hmm. and it's being run by a lady called Rosa Brooks, who was a previous head of the Open Society Foundation. She was also part of the Color Revolution and the Maidan Revolution as well. So she knows what she's doing. Mm. For what I understand, she's worked with other regime change specialists like Michael McFaul. This is what Revolver News says about the Transition Integrity Project. It says, so they are setting things up in such a way as to almost ensure that a clear winner will not exist on election day, and framing any refusal of President Trump to concede as grounds for military removal. Mm. This final stage of the color revolution is something that Rosa Brooks of the Transition Integrity Project has entertained for quite some time. The following excerpt is from a piece Rosa Brooks wrote shortly after the election, suggesting a fourth way to remove Trump from office before 2020. This is what she said. The fourth possibility is one that until recently I would have said was unthinkable in the United States of America, a military coup, or at least a refusal by military leaders to obey certain orders. And that excerpt was taken from Foreign Policy magazine. Alexander, what do you make of everything I have just told you?
Well, it's absolutely horrifying stuff. I mean, first, let's talk about this business of waiting until the last legitimate vote is counted. What is a legitimate vote? I mean, who decides which votes are legitimate and which are not? How do we know that there's 80 million votes coming in, you know, by post? I mean, what information do we have? Which day are we supposed to wait until? You know, if say 5 days have passed and Trump is still winning massively in the Electoral College, do we wait another 10? Do we wait another 20? Do we wait 3 months? Because, you know, there might be all kinds of problems with the US Post, which is apparently not in the best of shape. So, I mean, this is lunacy to talk in that fashion. I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous to talk like that, as if votes can be counted all the time. All the times that we can wait until some fictional moment in some unknown future when Biden suddenly becomes the winner. That's the first thing to say. And of course, it defeats the whole concept of an election. An election is an election. I mean, in every other country that I know of, postal ballots are counted before election day. If you're going to have postal ballots, this seems to say that we're going to count them long after. I mean, it's just crazy. It's nonsense, and it simply isn't. I mean, it isn't said in good faith. The second, John Podesta going off to the Western states and talking about secession. Well, please. I mean, you know, didn't the United States fight a civil war on the constitutional principle that secession doesn't happen? I mean, if the election result is disputed, there are supposed to be legal mechanisms through the Congress and perhaps the Supreme Court to settle those disputes. But what are we hearing here? We're not going to pursue those legal processes. We're going to, you know, stick a gun to the head of the American people and say, unless we get what we want, we're going to see the breakup of the United States. That's, again, extraordinary things. I mean, and lastly, involving the military in this, a transition integrity project. I mean, think of the language, integrity project, that it's all about maintaining the integrity of that transition, even as they are working to subvert the integrity of that transition. Because bear in mind, whoever wins or loses the election in November, Donald Trump, under the laws of the United States, remains the president of the United States until Inauguration Day, which is the 20th of January, 2021. And yet we are being told that military leaders are being primed to disobey his orders, even though he would still be the constitutional president after that period of time. I mean, it's absolutely shocking stuff. And when they say that, you know, we're never, that they, it's inconceivable that anybody would have ever thought of this before. Well, these crazy ideas, not just crazy ideas, these dangerous ideas are coming from the Democrats. They're coming up with these bizarre scenarios. No one on the Republican side is doing so. Certainly Donald Trump isn't. Why don't they, if they believe they can win the election, simply get on with trying to fight it? Instead, they're scaring the American people, and they're obviously planning something which frankly looks incredibly dangerous and puts in danger the United States.
I think that's why they selected Biden. They selected Biden because I think this was on their mind from the get-go. This was the plan from 2016.
Yes.
The Transition Integrity Project almost hints at it. This Rosa Brooks, George Soros had this plan from the minute Trump won in 2016. They were already game planning.
Yes.
This coup out. I mean, it's obvious. So I think Biden is the logical choice to put up there against Trump. They know they're going to lose either way. They know that Biden is not going to know what the hell's going on around him so that they could proceed with this coup. And I think that if Trump doesn't win in an outright landslide, then there is no doubt that this whole plan is going to move into effect.
Yes.
It has a very good chance of succeeding, I actually think.
No.
Because the Democrats, these guys, they have everything on their side. I mean, I was reading stuff saying that the media was going to completely fall in line. Social media and the big tech was going to move into a massive program of censorship and to make sure nothing gets out contrary to the narrative that they want to push out. Mm. And now they're working to get the military on side, which makes sense. You know, the Democrats are saying, okay, we've got the media, we've got the social media, we've got the foot soldiers in Antifa and BLM. We've got the riots. We're game planning the riots. You know, they've done a couple of test runs of the riots. So they've got that in place. I think the final piece to their puzzle, two pieces, are the mail-in ballots, get that through. And the big piece is getting the military on their side.
Yes.
You have Joe Biden there who's not going to know what the hell's going on. Who even knows if they're even going to tell him what's going on? And I also think, Alexander, that the Democrats have a lot more lawyers. A lot more lawyers on their side, and that's going to make a huge, huge difference. And I think they're not going to respect the fact that the Constitution says that Trump can remain, is going to be president until January 21. I don't think they're going to remove him right away.
Well, they're clearly not going to respect it. I mean, that's clearly been said. That's obviously the intention. That's the plan. But can I just say a few things about this? Firstly, I don't think it will succeed. I mean, I understand every point you've made. I think you're absolutely right. But I think at the end of the day, a critical mass of the American people will not accept this. I think the danger is not that it will succeed. I think that the danger is that it will precipitate a major violent confrontation within the United States, because up and down the United States, there will be tens upon tens of millions of people who have voted for Donald Trump, many of them, by the way, Americans bear arms. That's their constitutional right. Many of them armed, many of them in the military also. And they will not be happy by this outcome, and they will resist it. And yes, there are blue states, but there are also red ones. And I think that this is utterly reckless, in fact, insanely reckless planning and scheming. And I have to say, I do wonder about the underlying sanity, I'm going to say it frankly, of the people who come up with these schemes. When things like that are like this are planned, it doesn't result in, you know, Biden going into the White House and, you know, everything being restored as it was and bad orange man off to prison. What it results in is political chaos, massive division, an extraordinary crisis, and, dare I say it, civil conflict and possibly even war in the United States. That seems to me the real danger in this. So I'm going to say bluntly, I've been saying this for years. If you want to see things secure in the United States, if you want to see the coup plotters, if you like, defeated, if you want to see an accounting for Russiagate, and if you want these disaster scenarios prevented, then use your vote very carefully. Because there's only one way you can prevent these disaster scenarios, and that is by providing an overwhelming victory to the man who is now president of the United States.
Yeah, but can you broaden that out a little, or actually dig deeper into that, Alexander? Mm. How do you, there's no doubt the Trump White House and his team know about all of this.
Of course they do.
And they know every single scenario that's being played out. There's no doubt about it.
Yes.
What do they need to do, though, in order to stop this from happening? I mean, obviously, you have to stop this mail-in ballot stuff.
Absolutely.
Or at least you have to get everyone to actually show up in person to vote. That's critical.
Well, that's
get people out to polling stations and get them to vote.
I mean, I do.
What about the legal side, lawyers and mobilizing lawyers in every state, or getting that into motion? What should the Trump White House be doing from now until November to make sure this scenario fails?
The Democrats have more lawyers, many more lawyers. And of course, they got a lot of support in the judiciary. I mean, we've talked about, you know, Judge Sullivan. We've seen how lawlessly he behaves. We've seen how he's won in the DC Court of Appeals on the initiative of one of the members of the DC Court of Appeals, which still astonishes me. But it seems to me that the Supreme Court of the United States is still better balanced. There's always the worries about, you know, what Chief Justice Roberts would want to do in this kind of scenario, but there it is. And I also get the sense that perhaps the Republicans have the better lawyers. That was certainly my experience during the impeachment proceedings, that the Republican lawyers were ultimately making the more powerful arguments. But what the president needs to do is, firstly, he's got to make absolutely sure that the security forces of the United States, the military, carry out their duties under the Constitution. And if there are attempts to draw them into these kind of disastrous scenarios, he is the commander-in-chief. He is there to prevent that happening between now and the election. I hope, by the way, I hope that he is taking these stories seriously. That's my major concern. That, you know, he's probably reading all these things that we've been talking about now, and that he really thinks he understands that these things are being actually prepared and plotted. Because, of course, the danger is that there may be some people in the White House who tell the president this is all wild talk and hot air, and the Democrats aren't going to do any of these things. Well, the history of the last 4 years is that they will.
Yeah, the history from Russiagate, for sure.
For the
and
last
from point, Ukraine, I mean,
absolutely, of course. Yeah. But I mean, you know, you don't need to look at Ukraine. You need to look at the impeachment proceedings, the Russiagate case.
Yeah, Russia.
All of that. You know, the setting aside of his executive order, his travel ban executive order, the extraordinary legal battles he had to fight over that one, the fact that Sally Yates refused as Deputy Attorney General to carry out his orders. All of that is there. The fact that, you know, he always, whenever he tries to withdraw troops from Syria or Iraq or Afghanistan, he always has this coalition of people coming and trying to stop him doing it. So, I mean, he's got to understand that this is serious. These people are deadly serious about what they're doing. And of course, they're in danger. I mean, you know, when they talk in this way, when they plan in this way, when they do so openly in this fashion, then of course that shows that they're becoming very reckless about what they're doing. And that means that they must be also at some level very frightened.
Yeah. Someone in the live stream said that, what are our sources for all of this? I mean, we actually read out the exact sources, by the way, if you didn't catch that earlier. Yeah. We read out from the Washington Post, we read out from Summit News, from Axios as far as Hawkfish and the Red Mirage plan goes, from USA Today, and from Revolver News with the Transition Integrity Project. This is all being thrown. This is all out there, Alexander.
And we quoted Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, and we quoted Hillary Clinton. And this is all happening literally in the last week or two. So, I mean, this is all relatively new stuff that they're throwing out at us. And I think they're throwing it out at us in order to prepare us.
Except if you remember a couple of weeks ago, and we discussed it then, there were earlier versions of some of these plans being floated around, and they were picked up by Byron York and discussed by him in the Washington Examiner. So, I mean, you know,
Byron York is solid.
Oh, absolutely. He's absolutely solid. And, you know, it hasn't been denied, it hasn't been disputed that his reporting was accurate. There is no doubt at all that these wild and crazy plans are being talked about. What role Biden himself has in them, I don't know. But that there are some people who are, you know, in the DNC who are talking in this crazy way is indisputable. And by the way, shortly before we did this broadcast, I went to The Guardian, which is, of course, a British newspaper, but very tied into the Democrats and intensely anti-Trump, very close to the Washington Post. And I was reading a bizarre article by Jonathan Friedland, which is making some of the similar, you know, theorizing in the same sort of, you know, crazy way. So, I mean, you know, we've got to understand these are serious people. That's not serious people, but these are people with serious plans who have worked themselves up now into a situation where they seem to be prepared to think about the most bonkers, the most wildly dangerous scenarios.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Biden, I'm starting to come to the conclusion that Biden doesn't know what the hell's going on. What do you think? I don't think you're telling him anything, to be honest.
I'm sure that's right. I mean, to be honest, I mean, I do remember Joe Biden. I find it difficult to believe that he would be a party to these kind of things if he had had all his faculties about him. Now, I say that, I'm not a friend. I'm not an admirer of Joe Biden. I think he's so steeped in American politics that I don't think he has any conception or imagination of carrying out the kind of coups and plots that we're talking about here. That isn't his style at all. So I agree with you. I don't think he's involved. And I don't think anyway he's got the mental faculties at the moment to really want to be involved or to have any understanding of all of this. So it's very worrying. It's a very, very alarming situation. And it just shows, by the way, that opening up this whole voting system by allowing mail-in ballots is a disastrous idea. Now, I don't know whether this is possible or not. Diana Johnston, who is an American commentator who lives in Europe but hasn't lived in the United States for many years, has suggested, you know, if this is a real problem with the pandemic, well, you know, why not, instead of going in for mail-in ballots, which have all these enormous problems, why not, you know, extend the election, instead of having it one day, say, have it over two. I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, you know, these are ideas, but I mean, mail-in ballots seem to me to be a recipe for manipulation. And she's a left-wing journalist, and that's what she says also.
Look, mail-in ballots is their way to put all these plans into motion. I mean, it's crystal clear now what the purpose of the mail-in ballots are. Is to delay the results of the election so they can start throwing everything into chaos. You have Birx, you have Fauci, they've said it's okay to vote. You had Nancy Pelosi in the hair salon the other day walking around.
Well, absolutely.
I mean, Okay, I think this farce has been exposed. It's as far as what the mail-in ballots are for.
It's apparently okay to demonstrate as well. So, I mean, yeah. Certainly if you can demonstrate, you can vote. I mean, it seems to me that you go into a polling booth, you go straight out again. I mean, it shouldn't be a dangerous situation. I mean, it really shouldn't be. And frankly, again, I come back to this whole mail-in ballots thing, which is the root and heart of these plans, is a disastrous idea. And this shows you why. I come back to this point. When is this election supposed to be over? If it's not over on election day, if the Democrats are saying it is not over on election day, when is it over? Is it over when they say it is? In a week's time, a month's time, a year's time? When?
Alexander, when I was reading the article on the Transition Integrity Project, they focused in a lot on this group and their activities in Ukraine. So this group, this bipartisan group that is now talking about how they can, quote unquote, win the election in November. In other words, this Soros-funded group, how they can get a coup underway in November. They were looking not only at the Maidan coup, but they were looking at the Orange Revolution. Yeah. As well. Yeah. And they were actually kind of templating the Orange Revolution more than the Maidan, because there they worked out a scenario where the election went one way, but they contested it and they actually got it to flip another way. Can you take us into how Ukraine may have been kind of a test run for all these guys? And Soros, actually, it's common knowledge that Soros had a very involved hand in Ukraine. That's not a secret. So how could this be a test run for what we're seeing now?
Well, it was, because what happened in Ukraine was that there was an election. This is in 2003, if my memory serves me rightly. 2003 or 2004, it was 2004. So it was in 2004, there was an election. There was Viktor Yanukovych, who was the head of the party of the regions, and there was Viktor Yushchenko, who was the leader of the Orange forces, the pro-Western forces. The guy that got poisoned. Only now it seems perhaps he didn't. But anyway, let's not go into that. That's all complicated. That's a complicated story and some diversion. So there was this election. Yanukovych won, supposedly, by a small margin, but a clear one. So, of course, immediately there were allegations that he'd won fraudulently and that the election result was rigged. And there were protests on Maidan Square, and there was a massive street demonstrations and attempts to stop Yanukovych being inaugurated president of Ukraine. And then what happened was, they went to the Constitutional Court of, no, it wasn't the Constitution, the Supreme Court of Ukraine. And the Supreme Court of Ukraine, which was dominated by the Orange, pro-Orange judges, ruled that the election was wrong, that it wasn't a proper election. And the Supreme Court ordered another election. Now, the point about that was, of course, that it had no actual power to order another election, but that is what it did, and that is what happened. And of course, in that kind of scenario, Yushchenko won. Now, there's been analysis of that election since. The consensus now is that Yanukovych probably did win. There probably was some degree of fraud on his side, but there was at least comparable levels of fraud on Yushchenko's side. The two probably balanced each other out. And Yanukovych was probably the true winner of that election. But the point was, the election result was overturned by protests, massive protests in Kiev, organized protests in Kiev, and by a court judgment, a Supreme Court judgment, which is widely accepted to have been wrong and ultra vires. But the outcome was Yushchenko became president of Ukraine.
Yanukovych would later win in 2010, I believe, 2011, absolutely. And then it would lead to the Maidan coup,
absolutely,
of 2014.
Absolutely. I mean, it's almost like, again, like Donald Trump, and do everything you possibly can to prevent Yanukovych winning and consolidating his position as president of Ukraine, even if he has the majority of the people in an election, or a plurality of the people in an election behind him. So that was Ukraine. And one gets almost the same sense here. I mean, also, I get to say something else, which is that, of course, the people who were protesting and their supporters did so claiming that they stood for democracy, and perhaps at some level even believing that they stood for democracy. But it was a democracy which has no legitimate role for their opponents. Their opponents are delegitimized. So even if their opponents actually win an election, that election is by definition, in their self-conception, not a democratic one, because they are the Democrats and their opponents are not. And if their opponents win, that is somehow against democracy. By contrast, if they overturn an election and use unconstitutional methods to achieve it, that is somehow a democratic outcome, even if it means overturning a democratic election and acting in an unconstitutional and lawless way. You got an awful lot of that language and psychology in Ukraine in 2004 and 2014, and it seems to me that there are an awful lot of people in the United States within the Democratic Party and the liberal left who think the same way now.
All right. Let me knock out some super chats, because YouTube has changed their format a little bit and it's hard to isolate the super chats. So let me get to some super chats and then we'll revisit this discussion. I want to ask you a little bit, Alexander, after I do some super chats, about the fact that the U.S., that there are forces in the U.S. that are actively working to turn America into some sort of communist, socialist, utopia states, really strange philosophies and ideologies that these people have. And, you know, they invoke the October Revolution, they invoke the struggle sessions of China. And we're seeing a lot of these things that happened in history kind of, you know, pop up again into what we're seeing in the United States, especially with the riots, BLM, and Antifa. But let's do some super chats. Let me also make a couple of announcements. One is you can follow us now on Library. I actually have put all our archive of videos on Library. So go to Library. You can actually follow us there and see our videos there as well. So check us out there. You get all the videos that we put on YouTube are now on Library. It's a really, really nice site for videos. And we are going to be launching two more channels, two more YouTube video channels. They will be under our names individually. So you can just look me up as Alex Cristoforo. You'll find my channel. In the next week, you'll find Alexander Mercurius, his channel. Still the Duran. We just want to get more news pushed out to you, coming from me, coming from Alexander. Right now, if you go to my channel, which is pretty much ready to broadcast next week, there are no videos, but next week I'll have videos up there. Once I get my channel up and running, Alexander's will follow. And we will have a lot more news for you guys from three channels that we will be broadcasting from. So please go to Alex Cristoforo for now. Subscribe. Get me to 1,000. Get this channel to 1,000 subscribers. And next week you'll have videos. And then when Alexander's channel comes out the following week, subscribe to his channel. Get him to 1,000. And you'll be getting a lot more videos there as well. And we have some interesting formats from these channels to broadcast to you guys. So two announcements to super chats. Steve Bruce is a new member. Welcome, Steve Bruce. Valley S, $20 super chat. Thank you, Valley S. Thank you. From Sparky, plenty of normal election fraud is available. Junk mail voting helps hide it. In 2016, amount of fraud needed for a Hillary victory was underestimated. Establishment counts the votes.
True. Absolutely true. But of course, what is being proposed now would be an order of magnitude greater than the normal misconduct that happens in an election. And I mean, I generally think that American elections are reasonably clean. I'm not naive. I don't say that they're totally clean, but where are elections totally clean? But I think this is what we're talking about with mail-in, mass mail-in ballots on a scale we've never seen. I mean, 80 million is something of a completely different order of magnitude to what has existed at any time in the past.
Yeah, let me, one sec, let me put this user in a timeout here. That's abusing. All right. From Graham Russell, a £3 super chat. Thank you very much, Graham. From Michelle Corley, life happened, had to miss it. So sorry. Thank you, Michelle, for that $5 super chat. From Toilet Sauce, are you aware of the story that recordings have been published in Italy that prove that in the Mediaset case, Silvio Berlusconi was not sentenced legally, but because of an order from Antonio Esposito to Judge Amedeo Franco?
No, I'm not aware of it. I'm not familiar with this information, but can I just say, Italy is an extraordinary country. That kind of thing would not surprise me in Italy at all. But, you know, Italy works in its own ways. I mean, it's a strange, it's a different country from, say, the United States. And there's always been this quality of intrigue and corruption and behind the scenes operations in Italy. And somehow it keeps going. I don't think the United States can keep going in that kind of way at all. And it certainly just doesn't want to end up anyway being as dysfunctional in the way it's governed as Italy routinely is.
All right, guys, we're close to 1,000 likes, about another 100 more likes. So hit that like button, get us to 1,000. We had over 3,000 viewers as well. I think that's the first time that we've broken 3,000. So thanks a lot, everybody. From Michelle Corley, $5 super chat. There will be a fight, but we will not accept tyranny from Dems and their Antifa and BLM counterparts.
That's exactly my view. I hear all these lunatic schemes, and I do really think they are lunatic schemes, but I think in the end they will fail. I think, again, floating these ideas, the Democrats show a complete failure to understand the people of the United States. I think even many people who might vote for Joe Biden would be horrified at these scenarios.
All right. I think we got 1,000 likes.
Well, there you go.
Thank you very much, everybody. You guys are the best. From Joe, $10 super chat. Never before has God made it so easy for us to see the battle of good Trump against evil Democrats.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm not going to try and pretend that Donald Trump is a saint or even a wonderful or perfect person. But there's no question at all where the sinister forces are. I always said this. I said this in 2016. Trump has his flaws, but he's not sinister in the way that I always found Hillary Clinton to be. And that, for me, is the fundamental difference.
Yeah. That interview where she told what she was saying, Biden, don't concede. I mean, just pure evil.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very, very dangerous, reckless stuff. I have to say also, by the way, I said some things about Biden just a short while ago and saying that he wouldn't be the kind of person who'd be involved in these schemes. But he was the person who said, you know, basically vote for us or else. I mean, you know, do you really think that if Donald Trump is elected that, you know, there won't be violence in America? I mean, you know, that's kind of extraordinary language which should never belong in an election. And it's coming from the Democrats.
Well, two things on Biden. I've been saying consistently now that Biden is a warmonger, historically so. There hasn't been a war that Biden hasn't supported. He was the de facto president of Ukraine as well. We all know about his son, Hunter Biden, and what he did in Ukraine and China. There's another story out, Alexander, which maybe we should do a video on it, which was Tom Fintan from Judicial Watch. And they actually made a request to the courts to get Secret Service documents, which showed that Biden was doing some naughty stuff with female Secret Service agents and girlfriends of Secret Service agents. And instead of getting those documents from the courts, they had been destroyed
Yes, I heard about this too.
We should look into that.
We do. We should. I mean, I don't know the details of the story, so I don't want to discuss it. But I mean, it is remarkable, by the way, but very interesting again. And it does beg many questions, because my own impression of the Secret Service is that it was always a very, you know, capable and well-run and honest organization. But then I used to think the same of the FBI, and look how wrong I was.
Yeah, and by the way, Alexander, going back to Hillary Clinton, Hillary and Bill Clinton did an interview, I think yesterday, and once again, they said that that Trump is going to lose. They both said that. They said that when he loses, he will not go quietly. He'll try to stay in the White House. And Bill Clinton said that they're going to remove Trump, and Trump will be, I want to try to get the quote right, will be packing sandbags in the White House as they try to remove him. That was, I think I got that quote right from Bill Clinton. If someone has that quote, they could let me know in the live stream. Bill Clinton is also sounding off.
Well, again, utterly reckless and irresponsible things to say. And of course, when people say those kind of things, it is a clue to what they are thinking. It's not a clue to what Donald Trump is thinking or going to do, but it is a clue to what Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and the people around them are thinking. And that's what we need to understand. I mean, you know, we're looking at a situation. I'm going to say, I mean, another possible scenario that this sort of conjures up is that of Santiago 1973. I mean, it's that kind of thing, you know, when there was the coup in Chile. So, you know, we don't, you know, but this is, I come back to this, this is the United States. This is the United States of America. Does anybody seriously believe that these things can happen in the United States? I wouldn't have thought so once upon a time. And yet we see the Clintons speculating in this crazy fashion.
Yeah. Incredible. From Mark B, $4.99 Super Chat. To what extent is Trump an inconvenience that will pass, leaving the deep state in place and ready to resume business as usual? Excellent question.
A very, very good question. Now, of course, if he's elected and he's able to hold on to office despite all these extraordinary scenarios that we're talking about, then in some ways the challenge that he faces gets even greater, because he's talked about draining the swamp. He hasn't been successful up to now, but in a sense, the swamp, in discussing all of these things, has exposed itself. So, you know, he should really get on with it and actually drain them, because if he doesn't, then all this will have been for nothing. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what level of tenacity or determination he has. He's got, alongside him now, an attorney general who I think would probably support him to doing all of that, which he didn't previously. But it ultimately depends on him, and we will have to see.
All right. From Michelle, $5 Super Chat. I like to say I am positive. I worry. At what price do the souls of men get sold?
Well, indeed. Well, quite true. Very true. Very good point.
Very good point. From Gray Matters, a $10 Super Chat. I believe the Electoral College must ratify the election results by December 20. I think there will be terror attacks at the polls, and Americans will be deadly serious hunting and hanging traitors. Well, is there a law that they have to certify by the 20th?
I don't know, but I don't know the date, but I'm sure that is right. But we're talking about scenarios which have nothing to do with the law and with the Constitution. As I said, the law says that Donald Trump will remain president until the 20th of January 2021, no matter what. And yet we've already said these scenarios effectively exclude that possibility. So if they can exclude that possibility, why assume that they will allow the Electoral College to meet and make its decision before the 20th of December, if that is indeed what the law says? I mean, we are in a law, we are talking about lawless scenarios, unconstitutional scenarios, and they're apparently being discussed quite openly.
Very openly. Yeah. From Steve Winchester, £5 Super Chat. Thank you very much, Stephen, for that. From Grand Papa, $5 Super Chat. They are insane. I live in California. They have no idea how quickly this will be deadly. Yes, we cut the head off snakes. We don't want this, but question mark.
Well, I hope we don't. I mean, can I make this one absolutely clear? I do not want to see violence in the United States. I want the United States to continue as a prosperous, constitutional, democratic republic as it was and as it is meant to be. I absolutely do not want to see violence. The people who are talking about these incredible scenarios are creating a risk of violence. It's terrifying that they don't seem to understand this, but I also believe that ultimately all these projects will fail because I don't think the American people will accept them. But the risk is that before they fail, they will create violence in their wake. I hope that that doesn't happen. I hope that these things in the end melt away like the mist, you know, in a bright day. But I'm not confident because look at the people we're talking about. Bill Clinton is a former president of the United States, and yet he is floating these extraordinary ideas. He's talking about Donald Trump embedding himself in the White House and putting up sandbags.
Yeah. From AH, 5-pound super chat. Do you think the Kenyan is behind this? Also, why up to now has Trump not exposed where Pelosi or Obama, et cetera, got their fortunes? Should be easy, question mark.
Well, it should be very easy. And of course, he talked about, you know, Hillary, you know, lock her up and all that. And of course, nothing like that ever happened. I mean, I think he needs, if he's going to be reelected, he's got to understand that he's got to be serious about these things. Because bluntly, the moment he stops being president, which he will in another, you know, let's say, assume he's reelected, but in 4 years' time, his term as president will end. And he will be a private person again. If the Democrats come in, they will come after him. They will. If he doesn't come after them, they will come after him. That is the kind of situation that we are looking at. And already the Democrats are quite openly talking about this. They're talking about punishing Donald Trump for his crimes, which, of course, they never tell us what these crimes are. I don't know what they are.
Yeah, but if we take a step back, Alexander, I think you're right. You know, Trump went after, during the campaign, 2016 campaign, he went after Hillary hard, the lock her up and all of that. I think it was a brilliant marketing move and he got the message out. But I think Trump, when he got elected president, I think he tried to play it by the rules, the tradition of the U.S. Yeah. And he tried to, you know, move towards a peaceful transition from Obama, from the Obama White House to the Trump White House. I think he even said, you know, no, I'm not going to go after Hillary in that way. You know, I want to just... Yeah. You know, have a peaceful transition over to my presidency. It was the other side that ended up saying, oh, this guy's not going to go after us. Now we're going to go after him. Well, exactly. So I think that Trump tried to take the traditional route of things, even though the campaign was brutal. He kind of wiped it all away and said, okay, now let's follow tradition.
They placed him under surveillance. They engineered the removal of his national security advisor on, as we now know, false grounds. They alleged that he was the agent of a foreign power. And ultimately, they tried to impeach him. So he tried to reach out. If he did try to reach out to them, which he did, by the way. I mean, I remember that time. I remember when he went to Congress the first time.
And, I remember when he had meetings with Obama.
I can remember.
Smiling and joking around.
And exchanging congratulatory messages and all that kind of thing. I remember all that very well, but we saw what the reality was. And when they couldn't prove that he was a Russian agent, they tried to hang an absolutely ludicrous charge of obstruction on him. And they investigated him for 3+ years, and then they tried to impeach him. And of course, if you really want to see what they think about him, read any newspaper in the United States or go on to CNN or MSNBC or any of these places, and you'll see what people say about him there.
Yeah. All right. From Callie. Callie is a new member to the Durant community. Welcome, Callie. From NC, Republican precincts shouldn't report vote numbers until all ballots are in. Dems need to know the numbers so they know how many they need to find.
Well, it's a very good point, actually. It's an extremely good point. By the way, why assume that all those 80 million votes are going to go Democrat? I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, it just goes to show how utterly manipulated this whole process looks like. I mean, the whole thing about these mail-in ballots is just so troubling and worrying that it's just, well, it leaves me speechless, actually.
All right. From Kiwi Liz, this perfect day, Ira Levin says it all. That's $2 super chat. Thank you very much, Kiwi Liz, for that. From Samuel Stafford, $100 super chat.
Also, oh, wow. Samuel, well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. His super chat says, God bless you, Mr. Christoforou and Mr. Mercuris. Keep up the good fight. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Samuel. We will continue to fight. That's for sure. From Dan Noyes. That's right.
With your help. With all your help.
Yes. Dan Noyes, $5 super chat. Should the Dems pull this off, the U.S. will be analogous to Back to the Future 2, where Biff rules the world and nothing is legit.
Yeah, well, true enough.
Very good. Very good. Let's hope not.
Indeed hope not. I mean, I can't believe. I can't believe that they'll be able to pull it off. But it's terrifying that these ideas are actually being floated. I mean, it really is incredibly disturbing. And as I said, it's now crept into The Guardian also. I mean, in Britain.
Well, you know, I was thinking about it today. As the U.S., should the nightmare scenario come through and the U.S. does fall into this socialist, AOC, Green New Deal, Marxist nightmare that that I envision it becoming if things go wrong. As the US goes, so does the UK, and then eventually so does the EU.
Well, yes. I mean, we can talk about this. I mean, we did a program recently. I mean, I don't believe that Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton or John Podesta or all these people are socialists. What I believe they are doing is they think they can manipulate these people. They're out on the streets who are doing these things. And of course, what we saw when this has been tried before is that they can't. It gets out of control. By the way, it has in Ukraine also from another side. But we did a recent video about this. It gets completely out of control because you can't ultimately put this kind of thing back in the box after you brought it out. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I agree with you there. From Vadim Martino, $5 super chat. Russia sucks at poisoning. Somehow their targets survive. Maybe they need to go back to uranium. Also, is Navalny opposition leader?
Right. Well, first of all, he's not the opposition leader. I mean, I by the way, I've seen some opinion, some people claiming that he has 2% support in Russia. That is wrong, by the way. That all comes from one particular opinion poll run by an agency called Levada, which is actually anti-Putin. If you look at other opinion polls, he gets far less than that. And his party, the political party that he's tried to set up at various times, has in elections has consistently got less than 1% of the vote. In fact, fractions of 1% of the vote. The whole liberal opposition, the liberal opposition in Russia, all the various parties that make it up, typically get around 4% of the vote. So to call him the leader of the opposition is ludicrously far-fetched. And can I just say what I think? We Alex and I talked about this recently. I think that Navalny's fate, if you like, was sealed when back in July there was the constitutional referendum in Russia. There was widespread expectations that there would be big protests when the constitutional referendum went through and carried out changes to the Russian constitution, which Putin had advocated. And I know there were expectations that, you know, 20, 30,000 people would be protesting in Moscow and would say that the constitutional referendum was a sham. And hardly anybody turned up. There was just a few hundred people. And I think after that, people said, well, Navalny is useless. I mean, he's not even able to do that. And it's very striking. We've now had him ill. There's been all these claims that he was poisoned. And there's been hardly any protests about this in Russia at all. If you go back a few years, I don't know how familiar you are with recent Russian politics. There was a Russian politician called Boris Nemtsov, who was indisputably killed a couple of years ago, and 20,000 people came out because they were very upset and very angry about it, and there was a big shock across the country. There's been nothing like that for Navalny. So he's not an opposition leader. And by the way, I share your cynicism about Russian abilities at poisoning people. They don't seem to work very well.
All right. From Anomalia Nicole Chrysalis, 999 Super Chat. Secession is born out of the American War for Independence. It's not treason. See Dr. Brian McClanahan, Abbeville Institute. Lincolnian imperialism is a constitutional problem as a federal republic.
Right. I understand all of this. I'm very familiar with these sort of arguments. But all I would point out is that people like John Podesta, I presume, a few years ago, had the subject of secession ever been brought up, would have taken a Lincolnian position, which is that secession is actually illegal. So it's very interesting to see these same people who I am sure would have opposed these things and who supported the North, or, you know, who would support the North, you know, in histories and things of this kind, and, you know, the liberations, the war that the North fought against the South. They're now, of course, reversing themselves, and they are talking about secession. So reckless, irresponsible behavior, and secession over what? I mean, at least, you know, in the 1860s, there was a huge issue to argue over. I mean, you know, there was slavery, there was abolitionism, there was fundamental differences about how the United States was going to be governed. This is just about the election of Donald Trump. I mean, you know, it is so insane how these people are behaving. And again, one asks oneself, what is it that makes them so? It can only be that they're very frightened because they have worried about things that they have done. That's the only conclusion I can draw.
All right. Anomalia asks about her super chat being answered. I think we just answered it, yeah. Anomalia, right now. So yeah. Let us know if there's a super chat that you sent earlier that we didn't answer, but I think we just got to it right now with Lincolnian imperialism. From Steve Thompson, 10-pound super chat. The Democrat Party has become a global communist insurgency party.
I think there's some elements in it which are that. I mean, there are some people who are straightforwardly, you know, Marxists and talking that way and thinking that way, and you know, you can definitely find that. And I think, frankly, you also find some people who are straightforwardly utterly corrupt and criminals and have no real ideology, but think they can manipulate those who do have these ideologies. And it's a very strange very unwieldy organization, and frankly a very dangerous one. Again, it reminds me a bit of the Maidan situation in Ukraine, where you had various oligarchs trying to control these ultra, in Ukraine's case, you know, ultra radical forces there, and they found and have found still that they can't fully do so.
Yeah, you can never control these groups.
No,
just can't. You think you can, but you can't.
You think you can, you can't. Ultimately, it's impossible. You know, the same thing has happened repeatedly in one country after another.
Look what happened in Portland with Wheeler, the mayor. He thought he could control, you know, BLM and Antifa. Eventually, they went to his house.
Yeah, of course.
It's that simple.
It is exactly that simple.
All right. From It's a Bit Wishy-Washy, €5 Super Chat. They want the young versus the old.
Well, that is another aspect of this, is the way in which there's been an attempt to, you know, manipulate the idealism young people have and their energy, and to drive them against the old. I mean, again, I find that very sinister. And it reminds me very much, I mean, I'm old enough to remember this. I remember, the Cultural Revolution in China in the 60s, when they were doing exactly that. You know, Mao Zedong brought all the young people, had students lecturing their teachers, forcing their teachers to go through study sessions. There was extraordinary protests at the universities, all kinds of things of that kind. It's extraordinary to see it happen in the United States.
Yeah, the struggles. I wanted to ask you, I don't know if this is relevant. Mm-hmm. I've got the Irish mug here, the mm-hmm. Irish magic mug. Does any of this remind you of the Troubles? What's going on?
To some extent, but the troubles did have differences. I mean, if I can say about the Troubles, I mean there were two different communities in Ulster in Northern Ireland. There was a Catholic Irish nationalist community which had a strong tradition of nationalism and which identified with the South, and you had a Protestant Unionist tradition, which obviously identified with Britain. So the fault lines were much clearer there, and they were perhaps in some ways, they were different. They were more nationalist, very two, if you like, national movements colliding with each other. This isn't what we're looking at here in the US, it seems to me. But, you know, if we talk about Ireland, I once in a program that we did, read that very famous poem that Yeats wrote, you know, The Second Coming, which is to a very great extent about the Civil War that was fought in Ireland when it gained independence. And he has these extraordinary lines about, you know, the centre cannot hold, the best lose all conviction, and the worst are filled with a passionate intensity. And there is something about that in the United States now.
All right. Well said. From Brando Commando, $5 super chat. Secret Service should be disbanded. There's no doubt they played a role, or rather lack of a role, in JFK's assassination. Replace them with the Marines.
I've heard that. I mean, that was a long time ago. And, you know, if there were problems, I've heard that there were problems. I mean, the Secret Service made a complete, you know, they didn't do their job properly then. But I mean, one would hope that by now, that had all been sorted out. If it hasn't been sorted out, then it's very bad. As I said, I've always had a high opinion of the Secret Service. I've always heard that they did their job well. I used to think the same about the FBI. So how wrong I was. So, I mean, I might be wrong about the Secret Service.
All right, from Anthony, $25 super chat. Is there a chance the Republicans will win the House and thus have a supermajority to prevent the Dems from going rogue? Yes, Alexander, Trump has been saying in the past few days that the House will go Republican. And during an interview with Laura Ingraham, he said it again, the House will be Republican, but he said the Senate may be a little harder to keep. That was an interesting comment from Trump. What do you think?
I mean, he's much closer to the situation there than I am. I can't speak for this, but I think there is a possibility that the House of Representatives may go Republican, probably greater than some people think, because I do think that there is now a very strong reaction building and a consolidation behind Trump because of the events of the last few months in the United States, which have led many people both to move over towards Trump's side in the presidential election and over to the Republican side in the congressional election. And I get to say something else, by the way, which I gather that polling is now actually showing it, but, you know, we discussed it, I think, you know, in one of our earlier programs, perhaps even in a live show, in which, as I expected, there's more and more evidence of black voters now moving over to Trump and to the Republicans. BLM, to some extent, I've always thought, was intended to mobilize black voters behind Biden. It seems to be doing the opposite. And that doesn't surprise me, because so much of this violence is being done by white radicals, and it is black people whose homes and businesses and places of worship and places of, you know, socializing are being affected. So, and whose communities are being affected and whose neighborhoods are being affected. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if you start to see a movement of Hispanic and black voters over to the Republicans, which might help them win back the House.
All right. Matthew Kimball sends a $5 super chat. Sparky, a $5 super chat. 99% of lawyers in the U.S. are leftists. It's why half the time SCOTUS judges appointment by Republican presidents end up being leftists, like Roberts.
Well, I think that's, I'm sure that's true. By the way, I've had many dealings with American lawyers, and not all of them were Democrats, but that was a while ago. So, you know, I have to say, at the level of commercial law, I thought they were exceptionally good. So, you know, I'm not going to write them all off, but I will say this again, the experience of the Trump years has been quite shocking for me to see how political and partisan some parts of the American judiciary are. I felt that especially over Trump's travel ban executive order. I mean, I could see why a lot of people would oppose it, but I could see no grounds at all for the courts to interfere with it. The Supreme Court of the United States says, you know, took the same view as me. I mean, that's a very arrogant way of putting it. I mean, but anyway, that's what the Supreme Court eventually said. I was astonished that there was ever any doubt.
All right, from Flying Boar, $5 super chat. Same tactics were used in Ukraine are now being used in the US, looting, yes, burning, and killings.
Absolutely. What's happened is that all the methods of regime change, which have so regularly been used around the world, have now finally found their home back to the United States. That's an extremely dangerous, that shows how regime change policies are dangerous. They disrupt your own country. You can't be at peace at home if you're not at peace at abroad. If you pursue this kind of regime change foreign policy all around the world, in Ukraine, in Yugoslavia, in wherever, then of course it will come back to you eventually. It always does.
All right, Gray Matters, $5 super chat. Look at 2016 vote map. Seattle and Portland was a blue island. How many are blue now? Same with California. Americans had enough. We will fight.
Well, that's exactly what I think. I mean, you know, I have to say, I mean, it would take a absolute gigantic political earthquake for some of these places that we've just been mentioning, you know, to switch to the red, to go from blue to red. But I would not be surprised if there's an awful lot more Republican votes now in all of these places than would have been imaginable 6 months ago.
I've heard rumors that Oregon maybe in play.
I don't know. There you go.
California, obviously not, but
no.
Definitely Minnesota is in play.
Well, I'm sure. And why would anybody be surprised given what's been happening there? Yeah. I mean, it's entirely unsurprising. And I predict there will be much more of that.
All right, from Brando Commando. I know Trump can't be that bad because it literally seems as if he has no allies anywhere around him. Warmongers, Hollywood, media, and intel agencies hate him. That is such a good point. Everyone Absolutely. Is always saying how bad of a person Trump is, but look at the people, institutions that hate Trump. Not hate him, want to destroy him, his yes. family, everything he touches, and then you understand exactly who this man probably is.
Well, exactly. Well, exactly, because I mean, they have to hate him for a reason. I mean, there must be a reason for this, passionate, intense loathing they have for this man. And given what they are and who they are and what they have shown about themselves, I mean, that makes it, as I said, completely clear to my mind who you should vote for. Donald Trump has many flaws. I'm never going to dispute that. But the other side are not just flawed, they're sinister. And that is why you should, that's what you need to understand when you vote.
Yeah, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Take from Dita Poag, £5 super chat. Have you noticed the change of policy towards CV since Dr. Scott Atlas was added to Trump's counsel?
Absolutely. Of course, in fact, I think we touched on this very briefly, it must be said, in another program. But yes, absolutely. And can I just say, what a relief. I mean, I've talked about Fauci. I mean, I have acted, as I said, I have advised ministers. And I understood my role when I advised ministers in Greece and Britain was a confidential one. It was to support the minister, not to go around undermining him, which is what Fauci was doing. So now it's, thank goodness, we've seen both a change in the nature of the advisor, the top advisor, and in the general atmosphere in which this whole thing's been conducted. No question about it.
One sec. Alexandra, let me put a user in a timeout from, let's see, from Sparky, $5 super chat. Globalist robber barons use NGOs which support communists in the shared goal of a borderless world run by totalitarian central authority.
Yes, of course, the conception each of them have of a globalized world is quite different, but that's the point. They think that on the route to that objective, they can work with each other. What will eventually happen, of course, is there would be a profound reckoning. I mean, we discussed this about Russia in a program recently, and I discussed how people like Morozov, who was a very powerful businessman, and Ryabushinsky, who was another banker, you know, had supported various revolutionary parties. Morozov, who was a textile magnate, bankrolled the Bolsheviks. And of course, when the Bolsheviks did come to power, they had no more use for him, and he was gone.
Yep. Like Yuri Bezmenov laid it out as well. Once they get to power, they have no use for all these other useful idiots. All right, from Flying Boar, $5 super chat. Update on Navalny. Lukashenko claims to have a recording of Poland and Germany on this. Yes, I read that.
Well, I know. This is the problem, of course. You know, Lukashenko says the Belarusians have apparently provided it now to the Russians without actually hearing this famous radio or telephone call. I mean, I'm not going to judge it or speculate it. That's not what I'm going to do. I'm simply going to say this. We've done a program on Navalny. I am completely skeptical about this, very cynical about this. I mean, I accept someone may have poisoned him. He might have been poisoned in Russia. I cannot understand why the Kremlin would be behind it. And it looks very much like a provocation to me. I think most probably it's connected to Nord Stream 2. But I don't know, and I have an open mind. But the Kremlin, I can't believe it.
When did the Skripal poisoning happen? Was it during March the Brexit vote? Was it after?
No, it was after the Brexit vote. It was in March 2018. So the Brexit vote was in June 2016. So it was a fair amount of time after. But it was
there something going on in the UK that they wanted to sabotage or wanted to?
Well, what I think they might have wanted to sabotage was the World Cup, the Football World Cup, which was due to happen in Russia. And that was, of course, I mean, it happened right just on the run up to that. And of course, then what happened was the British government, you know, was giving people advice not to travel to Russia because this is a dangerous country and all sorts of terrible things might happen to you if you go there. And of course, some British fans did, not as many as they might have done. And they found that Russia was actually very welcoming to them. But, you know, that was probably, you know, the lead up to this. And of course, it's perhaps not a coincidence, that this Navalny episode has happened as, you know, the Nord Stream 2 thing is apparently coming to a conclusion, but there are also major efforts to derail it.
All right. From Toilet Sauce, €20 super chat. The recording has been released by Belarus and people are talking like Lukashenko wrote this script himself because it says that he is a tough nut to crack. Let's face it. He is a tough nut to crack.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, in that case, I definitely need to get on top of this recording. But before I can say, Lukashenko is an extremely tough nut to crack. I mean, he has been all over the place over the last few weeks. I mean, as we all know, there have been protests against him. But, you know, he doesn't hide in his palace. He goes out, he's meeting people all the time. He's touring factories, meeting farmers, meeting teachers. He's speaking all the time. He's on television all the time. He's surrounded by his ministers. He visits police things and he cracks jokes. He's sometimes actually even funny, as he was when he said, you know, to Macron, when Macron offered to mediate between him and the opposition. He said, well, you know, I'll mediate first between you and the yellow vests and things of that kind. So he is a tough, he's a tough person, and he's still there. And as we've discussed in a recent video, it seems as if he's pulling through. I mean, you know, not what I what a lot of people expected a few weeks ago, but it seems as if the situation is stabilizing. The strikes that had looked like they were going to happen in the factories have not happened, and he's managed to get most of the population at least either, you know, accepting him or you know, not protesting too vocally. And he's got the Russians on side, so he's quite a person, quite a tough character. You might not support him, you might not like him, but he's a fighter.
Yeah. From William Jones, speaking of secession, when can I expect to drink margaritas from my Texas mug? Next week. I've got the design ready, and it's going to be going up next week, so stay tuned for that. Yes, Bill and Hillary together decided to destroy Yugoslavia. Definitely, Bill did. That's for sure. As did Joe Biden. He was in on it as well. There's video documentation of Joe Biden leading the charge to destroy Yugoslavia and bomb Serbia. So that's also true.
Absolutely. And,
yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. And, do you want to say something about that?
Or? Well, I mean, you know, this was in some ways the start of the whole regime change caravan, in my opinion. I mean, it all began really with Yugoslavia, and it took on, you know, a ghastly quality afterwards.
Yeah. Did you see the two videos with Joe Biden when he's actually getting out of his basement a little bit? I mean, he's not venturing too far off. No. But the one video, he's giving a speech, and then he's going to take questions from the press. Mm. And as he's about to say, let's take questions from the press, he actually like sighs as if he's tired. He's like, okay, now some questions from the press. And he goes, oh, he's like, I mean, he just looks like he just doesn't want to be there. He's so tired and lost. And then the one that came out today, this afternoon, where he's like talking to the audience, you can't really see how many people are there. I doubt many. But as he's speaking, in the middle of it, he just kind of drifts off and says, oh, and there's my wife. I think her name is Jill. And there's my wife, Jill. How are you doing, Jill? And he just starts drifting back into what he was saying. The guy doesn't even want to be doing this.
No, I know. I mean, I have to say this. I mean, it's a cruelty. I mean, I'm no fan of Joe Biden's. I've said many things about Joe Biden. I don't take any of them back at all. But to put a man who is elderly and who's showing the signs of his age through all of this, and at the same time hatch all these insane plans around him. I mean, this is a terrible thing to do, actually. It begs the question of why they would do that.
So Well,
I mean, the question provides its answer.
There you go. From Sean Ellis, your thoughts on Kosovo and Serbia deal today, signed in the Oval Office.
Well, I can predict you. Yeah, I know what I was going to say. I mean, a lot of people in Serbia won't like it, by the way. A lot of people in Kosovo won't like it. But it's a win for Trump again. Let's face it. Mm-hmm.
In what way would you say this is a win for Trump?
Well, I mean, you know, a deal between Serbia and Kosovo. I mean, it moves things forward in his direction. It's another diplomatic win for him, I suppose. Anyway.
Does he kind of stick it to the Clintons by?
I think so a bit, yeah. I think so. Anyway, but you know, it's something we need to look about because everything to do with this situation is extremely, extremely interesting.
Volatile
is, you know, not a strong enough word for it.
Mm-hmm. All right, from Brando Commando, let's get back to the super chats and wrap it up. From Brando Commando, $10 super chat. Will Germany still be a U.S. ally if Trump's reelected? Their policies seem to be shifting more towards the east. Also, why hasn't Germany been on the same side as the UK in over 300 years? LOL, is it cultural?
Well, Germany and Britain actually have a strong cultural connections. And if you travel to the two countries, you could see that. So, you know, some people say that English is kind of, well, it's an evolution from German. I mean, you know, there is a certain similarity of cultures, but I think at the moment, Britain and Germany have tended to be quite good friends. They used to be much on the same side on many things in the European Union when Britain was part of the European Union. I think when Merkel came along, that soured, frankly. So Germany, will it tilt to the east? There are people in Germany who would like it to. There is a very strong cultural connection between Germany and, you know, Eastern Europe. Of course, it's in Central Europe. But one must not underestimate there are also very powerful forces that pull Germany westward also. So I don't know how that's going to shape out. But certainly, Germany is starting to assert itself more as a more independent state. And if Trump wins the election, I think that will accelerate. I don't think anybody should be sorry, by the way. I think, you know, it's time for Germany to find its own way, just as it is for the US.
All right. From Joe, the DNC should be investigated for elder abuse.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. From... yeah. I mean, seriously, it's a joke, but there's truth to it. Yeah.
It's true. Iron Horse, welcome to the Durant community. Welcome, Iron Horse, to the Durant community. From Robert Hill, so the Democrats would risk a civil war just to get their power back. The USA will implode from within.
Yes, I mean, you know, exactly. I mean, by the way, this kind of thing tends to happen in imperial powers when they're almost on the verge of collapse. I mean, if you read the histories, you know, the late Roman Empire or, say, the Ming Dynasty in China, you find people behaving increasingly recklessly and irresponsibly in their conduct of power struggles, and this creates an existential crisis. The difference was those were empires. They were not democracies. The people didn't have a voice in them. They still do in the United States, and people need to exercise that voice and exercise that vote. A republic and a constitutional democratic republic ought to have tremendous resiliency. But, you know, these intrigues that are going on at the center in Washington are very dangerous and profoundly destabilizing. And they are an existential threat to the United States.
All right. Craig Ferguson, welcome to the Durant community. Sparky, $2 super chat. Once Obama said, "You don't have to do this, Joe." Yes, he did say that. He was right.
No, perhaps the only good piece of advice Obama has ever given.
From Marsha Dietrich, a $10 super chat. Republican fundraisers say Dems only need to flip 4 Senate seats.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I think that's probably true, actually. I mean, you know.
The Senate's going to be a tough fight.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but the House, I think, may actually flip. From Sparky, a $5 super chat. In old days, even people with little education intellectually knew the importance of freedom of speech. Young people today had that instinct washed out.
That's one of the most dangerous. That's the single most dangerous thing of all. I mean, I'm not putting aside these particular plots and schemes that we've been talking about in this program. The fact that people do not seem to understand, so many young people don't seem to understand what freedom of speech is, and seems that this terrible culture of intolerance has developed, that is very worrying. And that, of course, does create a totalitarian mindset. Can I just say, when it comes to freedom of speech, it's always important to remember, and it is in fact law, it is in fact there in all human rights law, that freedom of speech is not meaningful unless it is used unless there is the power to use it, the right to use it, in ways that some people might be offended by. In other words, you must be allowed to say things which other people disagree with. Some people, some young people, don't seem to understand this at all.
No, they don't. From Mark, £5 super chat. Thank you for a great channel. Now nobody can be innocent with the Dems around. The price of freedom, eternal vigilance, lots true. Of people in power.
Absolutely true. And that vigilance has never been more needed than now.
All right. From Sparky, globalist robber barons, NGOs, and Five Eyes Global Intel are on a war footing. Maybe insurrection acts the right move.
Well, indeed. I mean, they are. They are. I mean, you know, what are these plans that we've been discussing if they're not kind of war footing? I mean, this is what, when people talk in this way, when they're no longer when they're thinking in this way, they are no longer constrained by the Constitution and the law. And what is war if not a breakdown in law? I mean, if you go back to Clausewitz, who was talking about, you know, wars between states, that's what he said. It's a breakdown in a legal system. And civil wars are when the legal system breaks down within states, and wars between states are when the international order breaks down. So that's, we are on a war footing. I mean, and it's terrible that we should say that. But, you know, look who is behind it, who's responsible for it.
All right, from Able $2 Super Chat, increasing gruesome Newsom sentiment in California. It would be something if California went red, but
that would be hilarious. I can imagine some people choking on their cornflakes if they got that news. I'd be astonished. I don't believe it. I mean, I just cannot imagine it.
There is a lot of support for Trump in California, but not
enough. Oh, of course. Not enough. Not enough.
Okay, Sean Ellis asks about Kosovo and Serbia. Again, we'll actually do a video on that.
I think we should do a video on it. Yeah, it's a good
subject. So, Sean, we'll actually dedicate a video to that development. From Anomalia, Nicole, why the West Coast and others, California and New York, to succeed? Differences in culture, governing, historical epistemology, interpretation, etc. Imagine the possibilities.
Yeah, well, indeed. I've never been to California. I've never been to the West Coast of the United States. I mean, I know New York, but I don't know the West Coast, and I'm told it's very different. So, you know, I'm going to be careful what I say. But I think that clearly there are differences in culture. But, you know, it's a part of the United States. And it seems to me that some people in California don't want to be a part of the United States. They want the rest of the United States to be California, which, of course, it isn't.
That's true. From Courtney Arlo, Scripple happened just prior to the Russian election, too. Same month as Assange. Yeah,
that's true. That's also,
the internet that's, as well.
Also true. That's also very true, actually. Those are excellent points.
Yeah. Let's see. Let me. YouTube really jumbled everything up with the super chat, this new interface. Let's see. We got Joe's Civil War to get back to power. We got that. Craig Ferguson, I think. All right. Alexander, I think we got it.
Well, what an amazing program this has been, and what an extraordinary dialogue we've had. Always is so exciting to be working on these lives and getting all these comments.
Thank you, everybody. We broke the 3,000 mark, I think, for the first time. Thank you, everybody who tuned in for this live stream. Thank you for all the great questions. And we'll be definitely following this story all the way up to November. Let's hope for the best.
Well, that is indeed. And hope for the best. And, you know, I very much hope for the best. I still
remember our history.
Absolutely. I still have great belief in the good sense of the American people and indeed their commitments to the Constitution and their system of government.
All right, guys. Take care, everybody. Once again, thank you very, very much. Make sure to, if you're not subscribed and you like what you saw and what you heard, please subscribe to the channel. Really appreciate it. Let's see. Flying Board sent us one super chat right now. Who is the Serbian leader and what is he, pro West or East?
His name is Vucic, and he manages to, he gives the impression at various times of being both at the same time. Sometimes he's pro-Russian, sometimes he's pro-West. He wants to take Serbia into the EU, he says, and he wants to improve relations with Russia. He's a very complicated person, and lots of Serbs don't like him, including especially nationalist Serbs.
We're a very shrewd politician.
Very, very clever politician. But, you know, this is certainly a subject we need to talk about in detail.
All right, guys. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great Friday. Have a great Labor Day weekend. And we'll be out with videos on Michael Flynn and Sullivan. We'll be out with a video on Belarus, an update there. And we have a video on MBS and what's happening in Saudi Arabia as well. And we have all other news stories that we're going to be working on this weekend. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a good morning, evening, afternoon, wherever you are in the world. Bye-bye.